Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This is episode 223. In the news, not a whole lot going on as usual. We've covered most of the Masonic news on the Masonic Roundtable. Some interesting things going on around the country as far as Freemasonry goes. Lots of lodges doing their pancake breakfasts with Santa and all kinds of amazing other things. Great fundraisers, and it is a giving season, and we do some charitable things as lodges go. But this week on the program, I wanted to talk a little bit about when we get a little too obsessive and concerned with our charity. And many of you might think this is rightly so. Our core tenets that adorn the outside of our lodge buildings, sometimes written around the great lights, we see the words faith, hope, and charity. And it's interesting because we have faith, which ends in sight, right? So you believe something and you see it, and you don't have to have faith anymore. You just know. Then there's hope. Hope is that thing which we hope to have, but hope goes out the window the second it happens. Fruition is what we call it. So you no longer need to hope for it because it has happened. And then we have charity, which anything we do dies with us. What we do for others carries on infinitum. And while this is great, you know, we've talked about this in the past, that charity, when you do it for somebody else because it makes you feel good, is ultimately selfish. It's not charity. And therein lies another issue, that the word charity is wrongly translated. Charity is meant as love. So not dollars for giving, not doing all these other things. Charity is love, universal love, that love we give to the Creator and from the Creator. And so we find that difference. And when we get so far off the beaten path that we forget that, we turn into charitable organizations, which is fine. This is how we get a lot of our public relations. This is how we do good for our communities. But what happens when we turn into a social organization? It is argued that Masonry is not a social organization or is not a social club, but I think it has become that. It has become exactly that in many places. I ran across a post shortly after I posted something the other day. Masonic Memes actually put it up, and it hit the nail right on the head, right when I needed to see it. It's funny how things work out that way. And just 2 days prior to seeing this post that Masonic Memes had put up, they put it up before I did something, which was I created a Facebook image which had the image of the Rotary, the Elks, the Moose, and the Masonic Fraternity, the Great Lights, if you will. And I posted that on my Grand Lodge's Facebook page. And I said, you know, what distinguishes Freemasonry from these other groups? These other groups all have initiation ceremonies. They all have oaths. They all have obligations. They're all family-oriented. They all practice charity. They're all social. What makes us different? Why did we join? Why did we join this fraternity? And the answers were varied all over the place. And admittedly, I tried to guide this conversation as a moderator would do. It's what I did for years, was moderated training sessions. Mostly, I said, what else? What else? What else? Until people got quiet and they couldn't think of anything else. And then that's when we came up with our best ideas. And that's what we did in this post. And it really turned out that we said, why did you join this fraternity? And for some, it was family tradition. For some, it was a curiosity. And I said, well, what differentiates us from these other organizations? And what people said was, what differentiates us is that we make good men better. And I said, well, how do we do that? Are we making good men better by opening up lodge? Are we talking philosophy in open lodge? Not usually. We get a degree, we get the catechism, we return the catechism, if your state does that, some don't, and then you get the next degree. Outside of the degrees, are they explained? Are we going through them? Are we dissecting them? Are we talking about the different virtues? Are we actually making good men better in this way? And largely, the answer is no. And how do we do that? And in an effort to stay relevant, Grand Lodges and other sovereign organizations, they push what they would consider relevant ways to make good men better. And largely, this has turned into leadership. And I guess there's nothing wrong with that, but that's not what I signed up for. And that's not what most of us signed up for. We signed up for something special. And so this evening, I think I would like to read the piece that Masonic Memes actually put up on our page. So I'll be reading that piece. Then afterwards, I will read a couple of the responses I received on my Grand Lodge Facebook page, maybe a few from the Winding Stairs Facebook page. We'll have illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison stop by for the Masonic Minute. We'll wrap it up with a famous Freemason, and we'll call it for the week. But as for right now, let's get right into that piece. I think you guys will enjoy it, and it'll probably hit home for many of you. A Masonic Lodge is Not a Service Club, by Right Worshipful Brother Lawrence Healy. In the history of our time, the first half of the 20th century will be noted for many things. World-shaking events have followed each other in such rapid succession as to overshadow many of the trends and movements in the social order which accompanied them. Notable amongst the latter, on the North American continent, has been the phenomenal growth of organizations dedicated to humanity. The multiplicity of service clubs and similar associations which have been organized during the past 25 years in particular is somewhat remarkable. To the keen observer, it would seem as if men, and women too, throughout the country during the years following World War I had become intensely conscious of the vital import in the words of the great master who said, quote, "Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom, but he that doeth the will of my Father." The desire to be up and doing appeared to be the motivating force. Many of these organizations, whose names are household words and whose activities are widely publicized, have great achievements to their credit. Vast sums of money have been collected and dedicated to human betterment. Untold hours of labor have been contributed by devoted members toward the advancement of the various projects which they had undertaken to support. Blessings of many kinds have come to countless thousands as a result of their activities. Truly noble endeavors to translate principles into practices, ideas into realities, and faith into works through effort of doing. The worthwhile accomplishments of these organizations and the favorable publicity associated with their activities have been disturbing factors in the life of Freemasonry during that same period. In discussions about their craft and comparisons with these other institutions, many of our members from time to time advocate a program of similar activities, and even a desire to copy their methods and introduce them into Freemasonry. In some instances, even masters and officers of lodges have endeavored to implement their ideas along these lines. Sincere and enthusiastic brethren sometimes give expression to their feeling of disappointment at what they term as the failure of the craft to put its principles into practice or to measure up to its ideals when it apparently ignores the problems of the outer world which are crying for a solution such as Freemasonry could provide. They feel a sense of frustration, like unto those in the parable who stood idly in the marketplace because no man had hired them, though there was much work to be done in the master's vineyard. They are waiting for the craft to send forth a clarion call to active service in some great cause, some worthwhile project that will capture the imagination and harness the enthusiasm of the members for spectacular action. It is claimed that Freemasonry is suffering by comparison with these other organizations operating in competition, that it is losing to them many of its keen young members who are attracted by the more colorful activities associated with their operations, and that its influence for good must decline if it continues to remain within the cloistered walls of its lodges while outside the world bleeds. In the Masonic design, the major effort is directed toward the development of character and improvement of life and conduct in the individual man, who is mentally, morally, and physically qualified to benefit from the teaching, and who has the avowed desire to learn and improve. By a peculiar system of ritual and ceremonies, great principles of morality and virtue are inculcated, which help to build him up into a better man and a better citizen. Freemasonry is unique amongst human institutions, for it is evident that its pattern was drawn under divine inspiration from the accumulated spiritual wisdom of the ages. Its lessons are derived from the powerful drama of life and death as portrayed in its allegories, where the ultimate meaning of life is interpreted in terms of moral and spiritual values which fortify the soul against the trials and vicissitudes of life. By keeping the great principles of truth, honor, and charity, and justice strong and active in the lives of individuals, Freemasonry believes that goodness and honor in society must result from the presence within it of men who are actuated by these high principles, and whose desires shall be to mold the life of the world nearer to the Masonic ideal. When every Freemason carries over into his particular sphere and society the great precepts of the institution, an inevitable impact is made upon the whole life and transactions of mankind, raise and set in motion the spiritual potential of Freemasonry, and a force is thereby generated that can transform the world. Other organizations may find opportunities for service in seeking to ameliorate the sufferings and hardships which result from the maladjustments of the social system, the effect of wrong and evil in society. But Freemasonry seeks to apply its age-old, tried, and proven philosophy to the cause, the sources from whence most of the ills of humanity spring. It deals in the principles rather than in projects, in the dissemination of ideals rather than in programs of self-advertisement. Men can agree on principles and ideals without necessarily agreeing upon the particular method by which they may be applied to some specific problem. Rivalries and contentions over the merits of various projects and the methods by which a plan of campaign might be undertaken would sow the seeds of dissension in the body of the craft, while it is the very essence of Freemasonry that unity and purpose in all essentials be preserved among its members, if the beauty and harmony of the structure is to be maintained. A Masonic lodge may be likened to a school or university where men who have passed the qualifying examination go through a course of study in science and are the scientific application of moral and spiritual truth to the art of right living. Its graduates, having learned that Freemasonry is a way of life, a quality of life, to be lived day by day, go out into the world and give practical effect to the principles and ideals which they have acquired in their training as craftsmen. In the secular college or university, the student is taught principles of engineering, agriculture, law, medicine, and various other subjects. Then, having graduated, he goes forth to apply his knowledge in the world to operations of commerce, industry, transportation, and the thousand and one other activities which make up our economic system. But no one puts forward the suggestion that the university itself should enter the field of engineering as a corporate body and proceed to develop some hydroelectric project or set up its own factory for the manufacture of automobiles or foster similar projects designed to carry into practical effect the principles which it teaches to its students. No one expects it to do so, neither could it undertake such activities without serious detriment to its usefulness as an institution of learning devoted to the study and research and to the training of youth. Why, then, expect the University or College of Freemasonry to sponsor projects or embark upon adventures outside the scope of its organization or beyond the design of its peculiar system? Why should its timeless glory as an institution dedicated to the teaching of moral and spiritual principles be tarnished by the corroding influence of petty rivalries amongst contending claimants for its sponsorship of their particular projects, whether political, civil, or religious? Surely it cannot be suggested that, like the biblical Esau, it should sell its sublime inheritance in the eternal verities for the mere pottage of public acclaim as its transient success in the operation of some project, however laudable. Without inviting defeat, confusion, and ultimate decline, the institution of Freemasonry cannot deviate from the great design on its trestle board, the making of Freemasons, building the Temple of Living Stones. Just as the university graduate carries his acquired skill with the honor of his alma mater into the world of commerce and industry, so the Masonic graduate carries his skill and the honor of his ancient craft into the world of thought and ideas, of life and conduct, where men may see his good works and be inspired by his example. Thus, Masonic ideals and principles overflow into the life of the community, the city, and the nation. And if our community and nation and national life does not reflect that quality of higher idealism which should come from the presence therein of such a large body of Freemasons, then the important task of the moment should be to so strengthen and improve the quality of lodge membership as to increase the power and influence of that overflow, rather than to dissipate our energies following a will-o'-the-wisp of temporary schemes and projects. Other institutions which are organized for service activities and which play such a prominent part in public life owe much of their success to the presence in their ranks of many keen and enthusiastic members who received their training in Masonic lodges. In many cases, the majority of those actively engaged are members of the craft who adopt this method of putting their Masonic ideals into practice. But there is no conflict of interests. There is no competition between these bodies and our ancient institution. Freemasonry was not designed for such a purpose. Neither is it in the Masonic scheme nor in any part of its basic foundations. Perhaps a fitting conclusion to this presentation of the question for consideration may be a quotation from a recent address by one of the most distinguished past Grand Masters of the craft, His Majesty King George VI, when he said, quote, "English Freemasonry has behind it the experience of nearly 2.5 centuries of steadfast adherence to fundamental principles, and I believe that a determination to maintain the values which have been the rock upon which the Masonic structure has stood firm against the storms of the past is the only policy that can be pursued in the future," end quote. It was excerpted from an address delivered to the 10th Annual Conference of Western Canadian Grand Lodges in 1950. Well, there you have that excellent piece. I think it does ring true. Even today, you've got a lot of guys who are kind of bummed out that lodges just doing all these charitable things, but they're not practicing Freemasonry. They've turned into a social club. Rotary, Lions, Kiwanis, Elks, Moose, you name it. It's kind of incredible to see the similarities. But I will say, I've read many studies that say these other organizations would not exist without Freemasonry. Most of them have modeled some part of their ritual, their regalia, or the way they even hold meetings right after a Masonic style. So it is interesting. I did promise you that I would read a few responses from the Grand Lodge Facebook page of where I initially posted my inquiry. And my original post was on November 29th, and I said, discussion, what truly distinguishes the Masonic fraternity from the Rotary Club, the Moose, or the Elks? They all have initiations, ritual, and are charitable as well. Why pick the Freemasons? And some of the best answers that I would put out there, my favorite was Tim Jacob, who said, I want to find the treasure. Me too, brother. I think we all are looking for the treasure, but between you and me, I think we know where it is. Some said it was a family tradition. We had Brother Brian Mara from Geneva Lodge, and he said, thanks for asking the question. Brian also said he wishes he had a cool story to go with why he joined, but he doesn't. In fact, why he stayed is something to contemplate. One of the secretaries of my district, Brother Shank, actually said what's kept him active is the myriad of different things that he's learned and people he's met along the way. I think I would resonate with that as well. One of my newest Master Masons in my lodge actually said that he values the trust that we have, you know, the ability to keep secrets. But as you can see, these ideas are somewhat what might differentiate us from other organizations. But it didn't get down to why they joined this one. We did have a good friend and brother of mine, Guide Sobecki, who actually did a piece for us on the Midnight Freemasons not too long ago. He said there is a distinct difference between a club and a fraternity. A service club is a volunteer organization and can't offer the same level of trust and acceptance a club can. A good lodge provides this feeling. Being an avid volunteer, he said that I usually present myself as a professional donating his skills, and as a Mason, he presents himself as a person. It's very interesting and a great look at this, talking about it like just a fraternity of men. Ted Hogan, not Tim Hogan, Ted Hogan said Freemasonry is a method of teaching the great spiritual truths of humanity. It claims neither ownership nor authority. It's spiritual. Without being religious, it interferes with no man's religion, but provides additional sustenance to reinforce a man's personal development within his own religion without degrading others or degenerating others. It is a secular spirituality that offers no plan of salvation or path to follow, save what is common to all good and decent men. It is unique. This is what differentiates it from others, and it is a sublime distinction. I really liked that answer, and his answer was great because we think about it, and he really hit on a lot of neat points in there, and I think we were like starting to kind of narrow it down. We're going where I wanted this to go, and then he talked about these spiritual teachings and these truths. That's what does separate us. If we were a company, what's Masonry selling? Well, we're selling philosophical truths. And if we're not talking about them in lodge, then what do they come there for, and are they getting it? Maybe. I would hope so. Many other great responses to that question. So with that, before we go into this week's segment with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison, I want to take a minute to remind you how to support this show. This is the season of charity, and if you love this show, please consider hopping over to the WCYpodcast.com and checking out our lapel pins, our tie bars, cufflinks, and money clips. We've got a few of those last ones left, kind of some stragglers. We have lapel pins to go around plenty this time, so check those out if you can. They make a great Christmas gift for your Mason and the family. So if you're a lady listening to the program and you're in the car and you are overhearing this podcast because he just has to listen to the episode, and maybe I'm talking about this right now and he's giving you the elbow, he's like, it's what I want for Christmas, maybe a little stocking stuffer, just go ahead and head on over there and purchase one of them. And I will guarantee that as long as you buy a pin or whatever it is before, if you buy a pin or anything before December 15th, I will make sure you get it. And if you buy it after that and you want to buy a pin and you want it by Christmas, do me a favor, shoot me a little line when you buy it, let me know, and I will expedite shipping on me to make sure that you get it. So please consider that this season. Those pins and those sales for that are really the primary driver of funds to keep this show going and to make sure that the whole backlog of episodes is always available. We don't keep a vault where a premium membership gets you access to old episodes. We have them available all the time. And so that's because you guys produce this show by buying pins and giving PayPal donations and doing some shopping on different websites. So please check out WCYpodcast.com. Check out Limited Edition Shop, where you can pick up the pins and all that other stuff. You can check out Support the Show links, which will take you to some good places to do some shopping, and use the promo code WCY, which will get you 10% off, and those organizations will send a little bit back to help keep the lights on at this show. So again, thank you so much. I really do appreciate it. I hope the season is kicking butt for you. I hope you got all your awesome shopping done. I hope you haven't been sitting in traffic at shopping malls or anything else. And if you went shopping on Black Friday, I hope there's no black eyes. I hope you didn't have to throw any elbows. And so I hope you're just doing all right. And with that, let's go right into this week's segment with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
The name Benedict Arnold has become synonymous with the word traitor. Arnold was an active member of Hiram Lodge 1, New Haven, Connecticut, and is known to have visited other lodges as well. Having been a commander in the American Revolution, Arnold became disgruntled when, in 1777, the military promoted several lower-ranking officers ahead of him. During the next few years, Arnold fell on hard times financially and came to need a substantial amount of money to pay debts he had incurred. Although finally promoted and given command of West Point, the American fort on New York's Hudson River, and also the future site of the Armed Forces Military Academy, Arnold's resentment and debts continued to grow. Now in charge of West Point, Arnold contacted the British with an offer to surrender the fort in exchange for the enormous sum of £20,000 and a significant position in the British military. He sealed the pact with British Major John André, but the plot was foiled when André was captured and executed. This turn of events exposed Arnold, who fled to the British side, where he commanded a few battles and then returned to England. In return for his actions, the British made Arnold a brigadier general, gave him a pension and an additional sum of £6,315. They did not pay the full amount since the plot failed. He died in relative obscurity some 20 years later. After the West Point incident, Arnold became a despised figure among colonists and remains today known as a vile traitor to his country. Even his own Masonic Lodge and other lodges he had visited had his name stricken from the records. Prior to the events leading to his act of sedition, however, Benedict Arnold had been an inspiring soldier. At the very outset of the war, he helped Ethan Allen capture Fort Ticonderoga. He then led an unsuccessful campaign to capture Quebec, but rebounded and commanded troops that stopped another British invasion. He also stopped the British in the Mohawk Valley and forced British General John Burgoyne's surrender. Arnold was severely wounded in his effort to seize Quebec and again at the Battle of Saratoga. His left leg was shattered in both instances. He was wounded a third time in the same leg at the Second Battle of Saratoga in October 1777. The third wound was so severe it nearly killed him, Arnold himself saying it would have been better if he had been hit in the chest. After the third injury, Arnold refused to have his leg amputated, and the crude repairs to his wound left the leg 2 inches shorter than the other. 7 months later, in May 1778, Arnold went back to service at Valley Forge and made a heroic entrance to the wild cheers of the troops who had served under him at Saratoga. It was only after Benedict Arnold's battlefield successes, heroic actions, and severe wounds at Saratoga that his financial and military troubles started. Without question, had that final leg wound he received at Saratoga been fatal, he would today be remembered as one of America's greatest revolutionary heroes instead of its most notorious traitor. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, always a great segment with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison. I hope you enjoyed that one on Benedict Arnold. And now we'll go right into this week's famous Freemason, who is Rick Wakeman. If that name sounds familiar, he is a very popular musician. He plays for the rock band Yes. Born May 18th, 1949, is an English keyboardist, songwriter, television and radio presenter, and author. He's best known for being the performer on the keyboards in a progressive rock band Yes, and his solo albums from the 1970s. In more recent years, he became known for his contributions to the BBC comedy series Grumpy Old Men and his radio show on Planet Rock named Rick's Place, which aired from 2005 to 2010. Wakeman left the Royal College of Music in 1969 to become a full-time session musician. When he played on songs by David Bowie, T-Rex, Elton John, Cat Stevens, and Black Sabbath. In 1970, he joined the Strabs for 3 albums before joining Yes for 2 runs from 1971 to 1980, playing on their successful albums Fragile, Close to the Edge, Tales from the Topographic Oceans, Going for the One, and Tomato. In 1988, Wakeman co-formed Anderson Buford Wakeman Howe, which led to his return to Yes from 1990 to 1992. He returned twice after that, from 95 to 97, and in 2002 and 2004. Wakeman began his career as a solo artist in 1973. His first 3 albums are his most successful and well-known. The 6 Wives of Henry VIII, Journey to the Center of the Earth, and The Myths and Legends of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. Wakeman has released over 100 solo albums that have sold 50 million copies worldwide, ranging from pop, solo piano, film scores, Christian, ambient, and New Age music. He has made many television and radio appearances throughout his career and has written 3 books, an autobiography, and 2 memoirs. He is the father of keyboardist Adam Wakeman and Oliver Wakeman. In his personal life, Wakeman had been married 4 times and had 6 children. On the 28th of March 1970, at the age of 20, he married Rosaline Wolford, and they had 2 sons, Oliver and Adam. The couple divorced in 1977. He married studio secretary Danielle Kormenboof in January of 1980 in the West Indies, and they had 1 son, Benjamin. He had a daughter, Gemma Kiera, with former Page 3 model Nina Carter. They married in 1984 and had a son, Oscar. He had a renewal of his Christian faith, which began around the time of his marriage to Carter. He and Carter divorced in 1904. He had a daughter, Manda, with his longtime friend, designer, and seamstress, Denise Gandrup, whom he first met in 1972. She designed many of Wackerman's stage outfits, including his famous capes. In 2011, Wackerman married Rachel Kaufman. In his 20s, Wakeman suffered three heart attacks. The first occurred after a performance of Journey to the Center of the Earth at Crystal Palace Park on July 27, 1974. In 1980, he was misdiagnosed as having rheumatoid arthritis in his hands. He discovered in 2008 that the pain was suffering was simply due to overworked after a period of lack keyboard practice. A former smoker and self-confessed alcoholic, Wakeman quit smoking in 79 and has been teetotal since 1985. And that just means that he has been completely clean and sober since. He is a master Freemason. He is a member of Chelsea Lodge number 3098, the membership of which is made up of entertainers. And in 2009, Wakeman became a patron of Tech Music Schools. As of 2014, he is the king rat of the show business charity, the Grand Order of Water Rats. That's it for this week. Please remember to find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and don't forget to check the Midnight Freemasons 3 times a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, for amazing and good content. Check out the Masonic Roundtable, going live every Tuesday night at 10, 9 central. And until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.